Hey everyone, Tyson here. We have a two-part traffic report coming up. First, Shane and I check in from Timbers training where it was wet, soggy, and Phil Neville's a little tired of us making it sound like they're playing like a good football team right now. Then we talk about the spring game, NBA playoffs, what we're watching, what we've eaten. And then Brian Tovey from Guild Mortgage stops by to wrap up toll-free month. Brian's been a huge supporter of the I-5 corridor, not only this month, but throughout our 2.5 years as a website. And I wanted to be able to introduce him a little bit and just give him a little bit of shine for helping us keep the lights on here in the off-season. Speaking of that, if you've enjoyed our coverage for the last month and have not subscribed, please consider doing so. We have a few more months until the season gets started, and it would really mean a lot to us as we continue to give you coverage from a publication that knows the difference between UO and OU.
Hey, happy Wednesday, everybody, and welcome back to the I-5 Corridors podcast. Tyson Alger here, joined by Shane Hoffman. We are sitting...
You can hear the rain.
In the I-5 Cruiser Mobile outside of Portland Timbers practice, it is a freaking terrible Tuesday.
It's a spring day in Portland.
Yeah, how are you doing, Shane?
You know, we just stood outside for about, I don't know, an hour and a half. You probably closer to 2 hours. Got some translated interviews done, and... probably some content coming out of it.
Well, let me ask you a question. We'll just dive right into, because we were at Timbers today. You and I are both getting used to doing translated interviews. That's not something that we've really had to like run into during college football or preps.
Right.
I'm struggling with it. And that's more of my fault just because I'm not used to like the cadence of like, you ask a question, somebody translates it, it goes to somebody else. It's kind of hard to play.
You can't shoot the shit at all. You can't.
Right.
You can't. Sort of convey the tone or the little details you want to throw in there, those kind of addenda almost, mm-hmm. You know?
It's, I feel like I just have to, like, do a better job of preparing because you can't kind of just, like, you know, I want, like, back in the day at Oregon media availabilities when you used to just be able to, like, request whoever and they would bring them out, there would be some days, like, you would request somebody and you don't really have a good story idea, but you just kind of want to pick their brain and mm-hmm. just, like, see what's going on in their world. And that's definitely harder in this. That being said, I think I do have a good story coming out later this week. But, yeah, it's kind of fun and keeps us on our toes a little bit because otherwise, you know, we're just so damn good at this journalism thing. It's
right, that's the problem. Yeah, you're profiling the tip of the spear for this Timbers team that's been equal parts maddening and thrilling.
So you've had to... beyond Timbers duty for Oregonian gamers the last couple weeks. And this is a team that is god awful in the first half of almost every game it plays. Mm-hmm. And then it's a team that's
actually not really, because against Columbus their first half was pretty good.
True. That's actually fair. But it's such a Jekyll and Hyde team because like when they're playing well, when Evander's out there, when Felipe Mora's out there, when like even when Jonathan Rodriguez is starting to pump in goals like he did last game. They might be, outside of Miami, the most fun team to watch in the MLS when things are going well. On the flip side, oh my God, like some of those are just like after practice today, you could tell Neville was just kind of pissed off at like this whole like narrative of like, we've been playing well. Cause he's like, yeah, we haven't won in 7 games.
it's hard not to like almost look in the mirror on that a little bit as we're writing and covering the team. Cause they have been really fun and there's been like a lot of inspiring moments, but he was kind of like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know how he phrased it. And this is a few minutes ago now, but he was saying, like, I'm tired of our you know, offense being praised for being fun and this and that. Because, it's been 7 games since they've won.
I don't know how, you know, I feel like the last 2 games, he's kind of ratcheted up the urgency in this of saying, like, we got to figure this out or else we're going to get left behind. You know, those sorts of things. I'm still getting used to kind of the cadence of a soccer season where what would this be like a 2-3 start for like a football team,
you know? Right, like, it's hard to know, right? Because they're closer to the bottom of the league than they are to the playoffs at this point.
They are
I was just talking with one of the other reporters here and kind of likening this team to like those D'Antoni Rockets teams where they have a lot of talent and they have this way they play offense where it's like,
we don't care if you score 140 on us if we score 142.
Well, right and I think this team has aspirations to be better defensively than those teams did. But it's like, it looks great when it's working and you're scoring a bunch and this and that, but you're kind of relying on one way to score. And when that doesn't work, it kind of falls apart. And he was also saying, because he knows soccer better than me, like, this is a team that hasn't done a great job of possessing the ball, and so they have these great, brilliant moments of offensive playmaking, but they're not, like, the most connected offense,
right.
So they give the ball away, and then the defense gets scored on.
You'll be covering the Thorns game tonight.
Tomorrow.
Well.
Tonight.
Yeah, sure. Ish, whatever. Wednesday. You'll be covering the Thorns game Wednesday. I'm going to be doing them on Saturday as well. As you and I were kind of talking before, you know, they made the big move last, or like 2 weeks ago, of reorganization with Mike Norris kind of moving more into a scouting development role. Now with an interim coach, and then they go out and they have a pretty convincing win.
Two
convincing. Does any of that make you feel like bad for Norris? Because like maybe this was coming anyways, or do you think that was actually like a response to?
I think something was coming. I think a response was coming.
It seemed like the players were taking a lot of ownership on, like, we need to, like, you know, like, even, like, the Sinclairs and Morgan Weavers and...
Yeah, I don't think any of them... I think a lot of them felt bad that Mike Norris was maybe reassigned because of their play. At the same time, though, like, he evaluated talent well enough to put this great roster together, and then, you know, his great friend and assistant coach takes over, Rob Gale, and then immediately completely shifts the starting lineup to the tune of 6 points in 2 weeks. So it's a little tricky to not feel like, okay, maybe they, you know, maybe Mike Norris is going to be better suited in more of like a scouting advisory role.
Right.
But again, it's kind of like, I don't know how equipped I am to really comment on
it's
that.
Like, it's like moving Jerry West into the front office instead of having him on the sideline.
Like in everything to basketball.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I think this is probably enough soccer talk. Actually, before we jump into the NBA, which has been fun to watch the last couple of weeks, I was at a couple of spring games.
Yeah, right.
The last 2 weeks.
I didn't do either this year. This is the first year I haven't done a spring game.
Well, I was going to ask. So I think that was my 11th Oregon spring game. Mm-hmm. Back is hurting a little bit. It was my first Oregon State spring game. So, like, we're throwing in a little bit of new. It was fine. I mean, it was a spring game.
Well, the Oregon State spring game last year was awesome.
So actually, that's what I wanted to talk about, because you covered that one last year.
Yeah.
And so, like, the big thing this week, and that's, you know, this was the podcast last week, was... you know, me and Bill Oren both thought the Oregon State spring game this year was disappointing. And the big kind of response from Oregon State was, like, this is how it's always been. But, like, last year, like, you went and covered that. That was, like, the big Aiden Childs coming out party. Like, it was kind of a something, wasn't it?
It was like a party, yeah. It was like, we've arrived kind of deal. And, I mean, this year's was a little bit antithetical to that idea. You know, I saw the pictures of the crowd. Read about the discourse and everything that, you know, the fallout of that, and I don't care that much.
Yeah, and I think especially, you know, this is definitely a news story that benefits from the fact that it's April, and there's not a whole lot of, like, other, like, great things to talk about, but...
It might be a foreboding sign of things to come for that program.
Well, no, I think that's what we're kind of looking at, is it's like it seems like such a small thing, but it's like it's one of those small things that I think adds up over a course of time, and then you can flip that over, and Oregon's won on Saturday, which was not in great weather. Like, it was kind of it was a crappy day. It was cold in the press box. It didn't really rain that much during the game, so you can't, like, be
after,
like,
a gorgeous run of spring
games.
Yeah.
But they that. I got there like an hour and a half early, and there was already like more people like in just like line to get in than there was at the whole Corvallis thing. I think they announced like 40,000 people. They had the Matt Carney concert afterwards, which was actually like...
Did you stick around for that? Were you in the press
box? So it was... They did interviews right afterwards, but they actually had the players come out before Dan, which is a little different than usual. And I'm not a huge Dan quote guy. Like, I don't, you know, I don't think it's really worth a whole lot of my time. And that's not to say Dan Lanning's opinion isn't worth my time, but what he gives you quotes wise isn't really worth it.
Well, I don't even. It's funny because, not to go back to soccer, but I don't think I've ever been a big coach quote person until maybe
Phil Neville.
Yeah.
So the players came out first, so I got what I needed there, and then so like I hightailed it back up to the press box, and so they have. You know, the TV monitor that has a feed into the press room. And so Lanning was doing it was actually really cool. Lanning was doing his, like, opening statement right as the Carney concert was finishing up with I'm coming home, or I'm going home, or whatever the song is.
And he didn't lead with it, huh?
No. Well, I was trying to write to get out of it.
Yeah, you wrote a good story.
But it was just kind of like it wasn't one of those things where like anyone's going to be like, "Oh my god, that was the coolest that was the coolest thing I ever think." But like it just felt like so crisp, so professional, so like this is what we do. Like, you know, it wasn't like there was like a big fireworks show or something afterwards, but it was just like, "Hey, let's use everything that we have like to our advantage and the alumni that we have and the resources and like celebrate Oregon." And that's what I think more than anything the Oregon Spring Game has turned into the last decade. It's like this is like the biggest showcase of like what Oregon is outside the season, and the off season's so damn long that you should take advantage of those opportunities.
We love to say that nothing of note happens in the spring game because largely it's true, but if you had to like predict what the storylines and the fallout will continue to be from that game. Because for me, I was glad that there wasn't like a dynamic performance from Jesus Christ.
Like Dante Moore. Austin Ovesen.
Right, sorry. Dante Moore, because we don't have to now listen to how he should be the starter for months on end.
Yeah, and like I thought Dylan Gabriel looked fine. Like he wasn't happy with
how he lofted a few.
Yeah, he
missiles like, that hit the dirt.
But. Yeah, he wasn't happy with how he played, but on like the short to intermediate stuff, like the stuff that he's going to connect with Tez Johnson on like 95 times next season, like they have that down.
I was going to say that the slant to Tez is going to be like, dude, like the top three like go-to plays in college football next year.
You know,
like,
you know whenever you just like need to make a play in Madden and so you just do like a hot route to a slant?
Like. Well, it's like the Tyreek stuff at the end of his Kansas City run. Like just Tyreek on a shallow crosser.
Yeah.
It's like that. That was the vibe I got watching that.
Yeah. So I think Tez is going to catch like 100 balls. Yeah. Like I don't think Gabriel is going to be better than Bo Nix. Like even if he had like 2 years in the system, like I think there's just a little bit more athleticism that Bo has. And also like, dude completed like 70% of his passes last year.
Gabriel doesn't bring he doesn't bring a vastly different skill set either. He's not known as like a deep thrower.
Right.
So it is going to be a pick-you-apart offense.
And, like, I'm not trying to throw up red flags. Like, I just think that he's going to be a very efficient quarterback for a very good offense. I just don't I don't know if he's going to win, like, the Heisman on his own. It might be, like a sum-of-all-parts type of, like, Heisman candidacy sort of thing. But, so I think he'll be okay. I was actually impressed with the hose that Novosad had. Yeah, he had a couple of throws that were just like, oh, my God.
Yeah. You had a tweet that was like, you know, the bad, it was intercepted. The good, he threw it, you know, three quarters of the field.
Yeah. It was like, okay. Like, because, you know, like, that's one of those quarterbacks that, like, you've heard mentioned a lot over the last 2 years of, like, oh, and, but no, I honestly couldn't tell you what his throwing motion had looked like until yesterday.
You'll see it a lot when he's the starter at Colorado State in a year.
Yeah, that's very, very, very likely.
It's funny because I was texting with a buddy during it because he gets really, like, reactionary and into it, and I always kind of try to calm him down, but he's like, our offense doesn't look very good. And he's like, wait, our defense might be really good. Yeah. And he goes back and forth because you're playing yourself.
Well, that was, you know, going into the game, somebody had asked Tosh, what are your expectations for this game? And I think he said, force 10 turnovers and get three defensive scores.
Deadpan.
Might have something on Tosh coming here in the next couple of weeks. So
you
I mean,
waited until the free month was over to drop that.
100%. Bring them in, and then
shut the gates.
We have some good stuff planned for May. I tell you what. Otherwise than that, I mean, again, it's hard to tell with spring. I think Oregon has a bajillion receivers that can make plays on the ball.
Oh, yeah. The receiving group. Well, I might have something coming for you on that.
Ooh, yeah. I like that. Jordan James is going to be good.
Evan Stewart, like, he might be the number two, more likely be the number two behind Tez Johnson, but he is, like, he might get drafted much higher than Tez Johnson.
Oh, yeah,
put it that way.
Yeah.
Because he's so toolsy and he's so dynamically athletic. You know?
Well, what do you think Tez's chances are of getting drafted? Because the dude's like a buck 70 soaking wet.
Well, but it helps that Xavier Worthy wins.
Well, no, that's what I was about to say is like you're kind of seeing like a little bit more of like at least an avenue for those guys to make it into the NFL.
Tez is pretty complete, don't you think? Like,
yeah.
He doesn't just kind of thrive on deep balls. If anything, like Troy was the deep ball guy last year. Tez was everything else. You know, not everything, but I think Tez has a great chance. I've already seen him mocked in like top two rounds.
Dude, he's fast. He can make people go on skates.
Oh,
he had that one where he just planted
ridiculous.
And goes.
I think he's a top three round guy if he plays well.
Seahawks play in Seattle. Or, sorry, Broncos play in Seattle this season. That might be a...
corridor special.
Corridor special. Go.
Were you surprised by any of the Ducks on draft night aside from the Troy Franklin slide? Felt like everything else was...
Dude, I didn't think
JPJ was going to fall, but...
Honest to God, like, I know, like, Troy slid from, like, where he was projected, I guess. Yeah. But, like, this was an incredibly deep wide receiver draft. Mm-hmm. And I think people, like, around Oregon know what Troy can do, like, mm-hmm. when things are working. But, like, again, like, he didn't have a great combine. There's nothing, like, on paper measurables-wise that makes you, like, pop with him. So, like, yeah, like, I think he'll have a good NFL career. Maybe he could be, like, a Pro Bowler, too. But, like, this, like, expectation of, like, this guy is, like he's sliding out of the first round. Like, I don't know. Like, I think he probably got taken where he should have.
He meant more to... Well, yeah. I mean, he meant more to Oregon because of the significance of what he did for that program. Like, you watch his tape even compared to, like, the tape of the other top guys, and, like, he doesn't flash the same ways. I don't think he was always put in the position to flash. Like, if you put, like...
I agree with you
there. You put Marvin Harrison in Oregon's offense, his tape looks a lot different, for example.
Right.
But, yeah, he's got size, but he's also skinny. Mm. He ran fast, but he wasn't blazing. It's like, it's kind of one of those things, like, what's his role?
Right? Yeah, and it's... Again, he could still end up being very, very, very good, but if you're an NFL GM and you're trying to, like defend your decision... Not saying Troy DeFranklin would have been, like, indefensible at that mm-hmm. point, but I think it's a lot easier to point to, like, that guy does that really well, and then...
I could see him having, like, a wildly productive career where he's maybe not looked at as, like, one of the top guys in the league, but, like, his connection with Bo, if Bo pans out even mm-hmm. remotely, and the way that Sean Payton in the past, like, Drew Brees and, like, Michael Thomas, like, the new slant merchant, you know?
Actually, before we go any further, do you want to see what's in my backpack to see whether or not I'm serious about being a journalist? We have... In Tyson Alger's backpack, we have... We have a stat sheet from the spring game.
Yep.
28-17. That last touchdown did not count. We have a... Oh, can't talk about that. and then we have one... We have one...
Credential. So basically, you're all about sports writing.
All about sports writing, and maybe...
Do you want to explain for the 90% of the listeners that don't know what we're talking about, what that was?
Oh, yeah. So there was a tweet that was going around a couple days ago, and, like, NFL guys like to, like, put this out there to, like, make it sound like it's cool, but it's, like, what was it? Sean Payton, during their meetings with Bo Nix, asked him as he was leaving, like, hey, let me see what's in your backpack.
Just ridiculous.
And, like, Bo's like, yes, sir. And it was like he had, like, cleats, I think, like, a football, like, maybe short.
A ball for, like, rolling his back out?
Yeah, like, a lacrosse ball, but it's not for lacrosse, coach. It's for rolling my back out. So because I'm only focused on football. Like, what if, like...
Well, and the guy wrote it, he was like, it was more about what wasn't in there. And it was nothing that wasn't about football, like, or something like that.
Like, what could have been in that backpack that... Let's say you're Sean Payton.
He's got a dab pen in his journal in there. It's like, take him in the first round. Yeah. No, but, like, he knows where he's going. This isn't like he pulled him off of campus as a student, like, what's in your backpack?
But, like what if he had a cookbook in there?
Yeah, well, then it would be spun a different way. Yeah. You know, it's like, well, he's got an understanding of other cuisines.
He can read
a playbook.
I just hate the flip-flop of, like, it feels like in some facets of, like, sports, like...
Oh, like, I have a transition for you.
Like,
in a
there's
second.
There's such, like, an emphasis on, like, diversify your interests, or, like, play different sports, or, like, have a life outside of this. But then you get into, like, this dumb knucklehead mode of football how much you really love this, like, or, like, they'll so many grades of players you'll hear of, like, oh, this guy, the toughness of this guy is mm-hmm. off the scales. It's like that's all the same.
So the how much do they love the sport thing.
Yeah. How much do you love the sport, Shane?
So that was used against Anthony Edwards. That was his biggest knock in the draft process was how much does this guy love basketball? And this guy is, like, the most into basketball of anybody in the league right now. He's found a way to completely take over, I think, probably, like...
I might get a jersey.
He's the face of the league all of a sudden. He's found a way to talk shit to his favorite player ever while still getting quotes from his favorite player ever saying that he's now his favorite player's favorite player. He swept the Suns. They're on a collision course now with the Nuggets. I have a small wager on them to win the NBA championship, and whether or not they do, I can rest easy in the money I've put into that, and I'm going to have a damn good time watching them.
He's, it's funny because, like, I feel like in the post... Jordan era, where, like, we've constantly been searching for, like, who's the next GOAT guy. Mm-hmm. And there's been different you know, versions of like the most dominant player. Obviously, there's LeBron, who's a much different style than Jordan because he's like 6'8" and mm-hmm. can bully ball his way around. There's the Wembanyamas. There's the KDs who are just kind of like athletic freaks. Edwards just, and I know this has been thrown around a fair amount the last few weeks, but like he looks like Jordan, he plays like Jordan, and he just has that like
he talks like Jordan.
He's got that same thing that like Jordan and Kobe and like kind of like just those like very specific guys had of like I'm going to run this ball down your face. Yeah. Yeah. And that's not to say that like his talent level is necessarily there right now, but he looks pretty damn talented.
Yeah.
He's 22. Still. It's fun. And I think it's like such a good thing for the NBA right now because you can position him and like Wembanyama as kind of like the two very different faces of the league right now. Especially when you have this postseason too, where we've seen LeBron, KD, Devin Booker, all these stars get eliminated like that are out of the playoffs now. I think like you would have told the NBA this like a year ago, they'd be going like, oh shit, like we're going to get no ratings for this playoffs. This is terrible for us. I think this is setting up as like the best possible scenario for them now because you have such a showcase for those guys.
Yeah. I mean, look at the teams outside of the Nuggets, which are now a known commodity because of their run last year. All the teams really in contention. You know, the Celtics people know, don't get me wrong, but like you got the Thunder, you got the Wolves now. Like there's a lot of these new exciting teams. Even the Knicks, for God's sakes, have been, I think, exciting.
I was watching that game yesterday, watching Jalen Brunson put in four. Yeah. Oh, man.
Right? I mean, so they're in a really good spot. And Anthony Edwards has this, like, he packs Devin Booker's shot at the end of the game. He's like, get that shit out of here. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, fuck Devin Booker, man. Whatever you think. Yeah, like, fuck Devin Booker. Yeah. But he's got a way of talking about his teammates, too, which is so genuine. And it probably sounds similar if you read it off a page as it would if another guy was saying it. But, like, I'm like, yeah, he's, like, lifting them up.
Dude, he just feels, like, so anti. I hated the NBA era in, like, the late 2000s and kind of going into, like, maybe the LeBron Heat era where it was, like, the league was too meta. Like, it was, like, anytime, like, a player caught himself on camera, especially, like, a Kevin Garnett, it was always, like, it just felt like they were overacting like a little bit. And like, it felt like so much of like the drama and camaraderie and everything was just all kind of big part of a show. And it seems like Anthony Edwards is just like, screw that. I want to play. I just want to hoop and I just want to win.
And the camera finds him and he's dry humping the air.
Yeah. he's basically like Kendrick, yeah. You know, like,
there's go talk.
He doesn't care about being famous like Drake does. You know, he just, he just likes to rap.
Devin Booker is more of a Drake light.
100%.
Some other similarities there. First round as a whole, the only series that's probably going to go 7 is the one that literally nobody's watching, and that's the Cavs Magic.
Yeah.
I haven't watched a single game. Dude, I don't plan on it.
I watched every game of the Lakers Nuggets series, yeah. And I enjoyed that because I just, like, I think that's probably going to be the second toughest series the Nuggets play over, you know, depending on whether they get the Timberwolves or.
But, I mean, they got the Wolves now, and if they win, they probably get the Thunder.
That's going to be, that'll be tough.
Ooh. Mavs Clips has been weird. I loved seeing Kyrie back to Kyrie.
Is there any part of you, and we're packing this in late into the podcast because I don't want people to hear it up at the top. Milwaukee's not going to make it out of the first round.
I mean, it's 3-1.
Yeah. Damian Lillard's not going to make it out of the first round.
Oh, God.
Is there any part of you as a temporary Portlander who's like, like you want it all out of Portland and you got the exact same thing in Milwaukee? Like you're, and I know Giannis is hurt, but like having to like carry up, like having to go through everything he did for the last like 2 years of like, will he, won't he leave Portland, get him to a better situation. And then you like get to that situation. It's been a shit show all year. And then you get to the postseason and then it's just like Dame versus
there's
everyone.
No help for Dame. Yeah. And they're getting carved defensively. Another similarity. It was funny, too. There was a lot of questions about his consistency as a player going to the playoffs. And then it's like, all it took was, like, his stars being gone for him to, like, always have the ball in his hands to be, like, productive again. But people are making jokes about him coming back to Portland. Like, respectfully, I don't know how you watch his year and be like, yeah, I want him back.
Yeah.
Eh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's just like
you got that Nuggets series from a few years ago to cling on to.
It's got to be incredibly frustrating to be Dame because you're better than any number 2 in the league. But
I don't think that's true.
Well,
anymore.
At least in his prime, he was better than any number 2 in the league.
Sure.
He was like, it's almost like you have, like, he's so good, he has to be the best player on your team, but he's too good to be, like, it's kind of like this weird purgatory for him, where right. it's just like, if he's your best player, you're not going to win. But if he's your second best player, like, it's also kind of a weird chemistry setup. Like, at what point this year did you ever go like, oh man, like, him and Giannis look great together? Like, it was kind of like one guy goes and then the other guy goes.
Yeah,
you know?
Dueling banjos. Yeah. Yeah, he never really got to play with, like, an elite big, except for Aldridge, and that was at the tail end, and Aldridge was kind of a... He was never, like, an elite defender. Like, he never got to play with, like, an AD type, but I don't know if that would have necessarily solved it, because it's not like Dame is some pick-and-roll maestro as a passer either.
Yeah.
Do you have any predictions going forward?
Man, I have no clue about the Denver-Minnesota series, because there's part of me that's like, okay, Minnesota's in uncharted waters right now. I don't really love Cat.
He's been good, though.
He's been good, but, like, you know, you kind of get into the deeper rounds, and it's like, how is this guy going to, you know, hold up?
Can we agree that it doesn't go less than six?
Correct. Okay. I was just about to say, like, I think both teams are good enough and talented enough where it's just like, I think either team could come back from, like, a 2-0 sort of thing, or, you know, at least put some games up.
The NBA posted, or one account posted, like, the starting lineups of both teams, and I was kind of, like, in my head doing, like, the defensive matchups.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, like, Minnesota's in the spot where they can put Conley on KCP, and they can put Ant on Jamal Murray, and they can put Jay McDaniels on MPJ, or they could switch Ant and McDaniels if they wanted to. And then you kind of mix match on the bigs with Gordon and with Jokic, and it's just going to be fascinating.
Dude, I will tell you, I know Jamal Murray got all the flowers from that series. Michael Porter Jr. is a cheat code, man. And, you know, he didn't hit necessarily the game winners, but, like,
he shot
the ones where, like, it's like a two or three, or, you know, it's like a two or three possession game, big, big possession coming up,
shot
in traffic,
running.
Shot clock's coming down, and he gets those, like, mid-range jumpers off of, like, that, I don't think there's anything more backbreaking in basketball than I've seen than that dude, like, the selective shots that dude took during that series.
Last year,
that was, like, the shit that, like, the Lakers just couldn't do. Like, I thought LeBron was awesome during that series. Mm-hmm. I thought AD was awesome during that series. But then you got D'Angelo Russell, like, being afraid to shoot the ball at sometimes, or looking like he's awesome the other games. And
yeah, MPJ, like, last year the Lakers fans were like, man, everything that Jokic and Murray throw up goes in, and this year it felt like MPJ took that title where it's like, fuck, you know he's shooting and you know it's probably going in. He shot some ridiculous percentage in the series.
So let me ask you a question, because before the season, there was rumors that it was close that Kyrie might go to the Lakers.
Mm.
If the Lakers had Kyrie that series, and so it's LeBron, AD, and Kyrie, does that change anything?
Well, you got to think about what they wouldn't have if they had signed Kyrie. They wouldn't have some of those guys.
Right.
It would have been closer. Still probably feels
Now that, like, we've had enough time to, like, I feel like Kyrie hasn't been
in trouble
in a while.
Man,
and getting
so
back to just
to watch.
Watching him play basketball, my God. He had that one last game where he went into four dudes in the lane.
Mm-hmm.
They all go up. He goes up and then just waits for them all to come down. And then his body control is unbelievable.
That one was understandably, like, hyped up a lot. He has a few other ones where he hit, like, a sham god into, like, a low clutch dribble into a pull-up, and it's just, like, it's art. All I see on my Instagram is, like, slow-motion highlights of his moves.
So that's what we'll be watching the next few weeks. I think Denver's still going to win the title, but I think for the first time in a couple of years, I like the way the rest of the league is shaping up with their development. Like, I think Minnesota's going to be a force for the next few years, I think.
It just seems like they're all in the West.
Yeah, well, welcome to our entire lifetimes.
Yeah, no, I mean, the East just feels super weak right now.
I got a new show. And actually, I had a new show because I watched all eight episodes within a Fallout on Amazon Prime.
How many days did you spread out?
I think about four.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was like two a day.
Not insane,
but, like, you know, I feel like every show we've talked about on here has been, like, the weekly episode drop, so at least like, it gives you, it'd been a while since I just had, like, a drink from the fire hose show. Fallout, which is, it has a lot of similar themes of, like, The Last of Us, of some of those kind of, like, other end-of-the-world apocalyptic shows.
Also based off of video game.
Also based off of video game. I enjoyed this.
I never played it, did you?
No. I enjoyed this a lot more than I liked The Last of Us.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, it's more fun. Like it has.
So that's what I didn't know. Like, I hear it's based on your show. I know the video game, so I hear there's a show coming out about it. I watch a trailer. It looks cool. It looks a little goofy at times, and trailers can often do that. You said it's more fun. Like, does it toe the line between having intrigue and being fun, though?
Yes, absolutely. And there's just, like, quirky stuff to it, too. Like, not to, like...
To prime?
Give too much away, but, like, stuff like people get, like, their limbs blown off, but they have the science now of, like, oh, I found a different finger. Like, let's attach that to, you know, okay. like, and I don't know. It's just, it takes itself less seriously than...
Is it a one-season thing?
No, there'll be more, yeah. There will definitely be more, because I think it got, like, 65 million streams in, like, the 2 weeks that it's been out so far.
And it got good reviews, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't one of those things that people were going to blindly watch no matter what, and then, like, you know, whatever, because there's that cult following, but it seemed like it did well.
So that got me through this last week. Anything that you're digging these days?
I mean, I finished Ripley, and I don't know if you're going to love Ripley. It's a show that I loved, and it's really good. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you would get maybe bored by it at times. I think it's so well done that it was impossible to get bored. I'm curious to know what you think about it. I'm still finishing Shogun, which also was amazing, or is amazing.
That's just a one-season thing, yeah, right?
Shogun?
Yeah.
I don't...
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to do another one, but they might.
Eat anything good this week?
I went to Grand Central Bakery.
I haven't been there in years.
Well, there's a ton of them. I went to one on Fremont.
That's the one I used to go to.
Well, there's two on Fremont.
On, like, 47th-ish?
Yeah, I went there.
I used to live on, like, 50th and Fremont, that area. That was a great location.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, so much good food.
Yeah. It was funny. I went with two buddies, and, like, I got there early, so I got, like, a coffee and a breakfast sandwich. It was solid. And then they came in and they got, like, pastries and a loaf of bread. And I went back up and I got, like, a loaf of bread and I got another sandwich for, like, lunch. And it's good. I went to this place called Normandy this week with my family.
Okay.
Probably a place I wouldn't have taken myself because it's a little pricier.
It was
really good, though. It's more of a seafood-facing restaurant, but we also had some really good ribs there.
Oh, okay.
Went to Oma's again last night with my family.
That's a go-to for you.
Well, because my stepmom found it a few years ago when we were in town, so we go every time they come
back. Ah, okay.
You still haven't been, though.
No, I haven't. This week, I met some friends at Matt's Barbecue Tacos.
Yep, great. Haven't had in a while, but delicious.
Didn't eat, but had another friend's going away party, which was at Chopsticks on Sandy, which is like a big karaoke bar.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I didn't sing anything, but no, it was
I'm
fun.
Not a karaoke guy. If you, okay, let me ask you this. Maybe back in your day, maybe now, but like, are you gonna, if you have a choice between the karaoke or like really hitting the dance floor dancing?
Oh man, I'm only a dance at weddings guy.
Okay.
And I love dancing at weddings.
What, are you hitting like the Cabbage Patch or something?
Oh dude, I'm hitting every move you've ever seen. And it's hitting me back. Yeah, but I've never been like a let's go out to like a club or let's go. Yeah, never once have I socially danced outside of a wedding.
Okay.
I will do, you know me, I'm a goofy guy. I'll do some karaoke every once in a while, but it's never like a serious like. That was the thing going to Chopsticks is like, you know, for every like two like groups of people having fun together, songs there's like one regular that like is just like I'm doing my 7:30. Like
it's a weird vibe.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, usually I'll get, I do have one go-to karaoke song.
What
it's it's Alanis Morissette's You Oughta Know. Okay. But somebody did that right as I was walking in.
So
I was like, you know what, I don't have to do this. So.
Man, I don't know what my go-to would be because I just don't really do it. But if I've had to pick, I'd say the dancing one, but I'm not really one to tear up the dance floor often. You know, it's hard to get energy to go out and do
with those some with right some now. Of these outfits you've been wearing lately, you kind of do look like the 2000s like so like right in the like late 90s early 2000s there was like this.
You got to describe what the outfits are.
Genre of clothing was like future everything. It was like kind of looked like the Matrix, you know, like
you think
like,
I'm dressing like the Matrix?
No, but I think that it's like the next iteration of what that would have been.
Okay.
Like, you had those cool sunglasses, those, like, wraparound sunglasses.
They were wraparound.
They're not wraparound, but they're, you know.
They're like the rectangle. They had rectangles.
Yeah, okay. You know.
Yeah, you can find that on Twitter if you want.
Yeah, you can find it on Twitter. I think.
Well, you'll probably post my outfit from today so people can judge it. But today was so simple. I just feel like I'm dressing more like a Portlander.
Funniest thing at Timbers practice today.
Oh, man.
Jill Farley. She's not going to listen to this. But it's their Timbers communication liaison director, one of the things.
If this happened to be the first episode she listened to, she didn't make it this far.
Yeah. Anyways, you don't use umbrellas in this town.
No. Everyone knows that.
So we're at practice today, and all of a sudden we see Jill taking off running. That's because her umbrella got caught tumbling by a gust of wind, tumbling all the way down. It was just a nice little comical reprieve from an otherwise cold and wet and boring time at training today.
That ran very late. Yeah. And then it was like two umbrellas in circulation, and it was like at first they were holding it for us, and we're like, oh, we'll take it.
Today is the first time that I have ever conducted an interview while holding an umbrella for the person I'm interviewing and the translator of the person.
And you said that the players were getting laughed
at. Yeah, they were. They thought that was pretty funny. So, but that's the lengths the I-5 corridor will do.
Well, you'll post the pictures, I'm sure. Yeah. We'll get a look on Twitter.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys. We'll see you guys next week.
Maybe.
That's ominous. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the I-5 Corridor's Traffic Report. Got a little something special for you here on this Tuesday. Technically, it's Wednesday morning, but as many of you know, we've been free for the last month. That's been thanks to the support of Brian Tovey of Guild Mortgage, and longtime I-5 Corridor subscribers probably recognize that name as somebody who has supported us quite a bit over the last 2 years. I think it was maybe a year and a half ago we did that Adopt a Highway thing. And the main point of it was just back when I launched the corridor, I kind of regret not having a free month to like let people come in and really sample the site, for especially for people who didn't know me. And so with it being April and spring football and having kind of an array of different sports to cover with the Timbers and Winterhawks as well, I really wanted to do that this month, and the first person that I wanted to get in touch with was Brian Tovey, because he's been, I think you were my first paying subscriber. You were the first person to do ads with me, and so when I needed a little bit of money, and I was like, hey, Tovey, you want to have your name plastered all over the I-5 corridor for a month? You stood right in line, and so I just wanted to say thank you, and I wanted to say thank you on behalf of the readers who have enjoyed the coverage I hope they enjoyed the coverage the last month, but I wanted to bring you on to say thanks, introduce you a little bit, and just talk some Oregon football and maybe some Padres. So, how you doing, buddy?
I've watched your career blossom as we've gone through the years, from the days of the Oregonian up until now, which I think you're peaking, or at least you're on that level where you're making everyone happy, and you've got an awesome following of loyal fans. Did you have a name for?
I've thought about that, because one thing that I do want to do, like maybe having like a Discord or like some sort of like message board, or not message board, but just like place where corridor subscribers can kind of come together and communicate and maybe share stories. And as you said, like there needs to be a name for them. And I'm not like, pardon my take, I think it's like the award-winning listeners. There's some other ones. I guess we need to be like highway themed for this.
Yeah, because you don't want to do like Corridor Nation. That's kind of a little like overused. I-5, High Five.
The High Fives?
The High Fives.
I could get it sponsored by a weed company.
The High Fives?
You'll see like a lot of heads and things like the...
Yeah, like Deadheads?
Deadheads. Roadheads. Ooh.
we'll stick.
We'll run that one up the flagpole and see where it sticks. Yeah. I do want to give you a little bit of a platform to talk a little bit about what you do and why you were able to do kind of the sponsorship thing for the last month. But the first thing I want to ask you is Dylan Gabriel going to be that guy?
I believe in Dylan. I've actually missed the spring game. I'm kind of embarrassed to say.
Really?
Yeah, I was down in San Diego over the weekend.
That's okay. Like San Diego's nice.
Yeah, I'm gonna get caught up and watch that. I've got it recorded here. I just got back in last night. So, but yeah, anxious to see eager to see like how he's gonna do.
Who was your first Oregon quarterback? Because you went to UO. Who was the team that like made you fall in love with this group?
Yeah, I came in. The 2001 season.
Oh, that's not a bad one, right?
Yeah. It was a nice season. Joey was running the show at that point. It was his senior year. And so my first Duck game ever at Autzen was the Wisconsin rematch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and Joey stuck it in on like fourth and goal with maybe like a minute left to win the game. It was, and I was hooked. Yeah, it was amazing.
Huh? So I went to University of Montana, and like it's kind of harder to look back on some of those games as like the I was hooked moment, just because especially in the FCS, there's a lot of like 65-10. I mean, granted, I guess it's the same with Oregon, but I remember one game. It was like the playoffs, tight game. Javen, they were playing Appalachian State in the snow. Javen Sombrano caught this touchdown pass, and like it's just like little like things that are seared in your brain from 20 years ago that just kind of stick with you a little bit.
Sombrano sounds familiar. He played in the pros?
He got drafted by the Colts. Okay. And I think he got a cup of tea. I don't know if he made it out of training camp or not.
Practice squad.
Okay, so you were there for Joey.
I was there for Joey, and then the beginning of the Fife era.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you know, then we had some dark years.
Did you know Fife's a dentist now?
I did not know that.
Fife is a dentist in Eugene.
Okay.
And I called him up. This was after Mariota graduated. And I was writing a story of like, you know, who wants to be the next guy? And so he was the next guy to Joey and had, you know, some pretty early success too with that Michigan game and getting the Sports Illustrated cover. Yeah. Obviously, it didn't necessarily, you know, he didn't become the next Joey Harrington per se, but... So I called him up because I was writing a story about Jeff Lockie and like, you know, what's it like to be like that guy. And I figured out he worked, it was like at working at the Eugene dentist office, like had to like talk to, you know, the front desk lady, and then got it. And it was just fun because I believe he's got the Sports Illustrated posters up in the dental office. But I always do kind of like tracking to see like where former players end up, because you're so attached to like the guys who make the NFL, or the guys like a Joey Harrington who's still in the media and stuff. And
yep.
Most of these dudes just end up with regular jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It was a great time to, you know, cut my teeth as a duck for sure.
Like, yeah.
It was a golden era.
And where are you from originally?
I'm from San Diego.
San Diego. So yeah. You're a Padres fan.
Padres fan too. Yep. San Diego State. I went to San Diego State prior to Oregon.
Okay.
And
is San Diego State like just as perfect as it sounds? Because
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a little too much fun for me. That's why I ended up, ended up here a little too much, you know, going to the beach and Tijuana and such. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty perfect. The social scene's nice, and it's actually become quite an academic,
yeah,
you know, school.
Well, they had to get up to those Pac-12 standards before never actually getting into said Pac-12. All right, let's get into the brass tacks here. I grew up wanting to be a sports writer. That's what I went to school for.
Yep.
That's the only thing that I've done, and I think I'm okay at it. But you know, we take things as they come, and you know, the economy doesn't help either.
Yeah. Yep.
Or it's very ups and downs. I imagine that's got to be stressful as in your business as well too, where it's just like everything is kind of dictated, like the highs and lows are completely dictated by things that are out of your control. Like what is that kind of like as just somebody who's, you know, trying to, you know, just be consistent, right? you know, like.
Yeah, it's an interesting profession. So, you know, for those of you who don't know, I'm a loan officer with a mortgage company, Guild Mortgage, and I've been in the business, this will be my 19th year.
Jeez.
And so, yeah, I mean, and I've kind of seen all of the cycles, all of the ups and downs, and you just kind of learn that everything does come in cycles. I mean, when I got into the business, I was a broker. I was also bartending at the same time, like kind of out of school, not sure what I really wanted to do. Entry-level jobs where nobody's making any money, and this was like right before the big, huge recession, right?
Yeah.
And so... cut my teeth as a broker in like this era of subprime mortgages, where like almost anyone with a heartbeat and the ability to sign papers could get a loan, you know? And it was such an eye opener for me, cause I'm like coming from a reality, like, okay, how, like, you can't afford this. Like, let's not go get you into this loan
right.
that you can't afford. And so, you know, I think from that came, that allowed me actually to have, you know, somewhat of a reputation and stick around during those dark days of, you know, 07, 08, 09,
yeah.
where it was just nothing. kept bartending because I had to have a little bit of something, you know, on the side, and kind of made it through that dip.
Did you just see like a lot of like colleagues or people you knew working with just be like, you know, we're out, gone. Like we're gone.
Gone.
Like we're, yeah.
Yeah. The herd was thinned. And that was another benefit of making it through, is when we came through it, you know, some regulations came in, some of those bad loans went away, and a lot of the bad seeds went away.
Yeah.
And so there was more opportunity for, you know, the remaining, you know, loan officers and brokers to thrive. And so, yeah. And then, you know, it was kind of just up and down steady as I got more experience. And then COVID came. And whereas for the rest of the world, COVID sucked.
Right.
For me personally, and most people in the industry, including, you know, realtors and whatnot, it was amazing. I mean, we were cranking.
So do you have to get really good at like kind of like dividing and saving your money up, like when the times are really good, to then get these are things that I will find very useful for myself, because I have busy season, which is August and September and October, and that's when probably 80% of the corridor income comes in, and I'm not great yet at parceling that out to last for the whole rest of the year. Like how do you do that?
Yeah, for me, I'm just a bit conservative as far as like big price tag things.
Right.
Like, I'll set aside savings, but, of course.
Nice, like, Ferrari you wrote about in here, though, by the way. And I love that it's just got your face on the side of it, too.
Yep, thanks for leaving this space open for me. Yeah, I think that's the big thing. I mean, you know, you just got to watch, you know, you want to like, go out and live this lavish life, but it, you know that days like now are coming, like, because it's slowed down a lot. So, thankfully, you know, put away some money, you kind of make a little budget. It doesn't hurt me that I've got a wife that also produces income, so that helps a lot. And you do as well. And so, you know, hopefully not to lean on her too much, but you know, it's you have to think about those things, and you know, thankfully I'm hanging in there.
What's your favorite part of your job?
Man, great question. I think for me, the biggest thing is first time homebuyers. It's got to be, because
which I don't mean to interrupt, but when Allie and I we bought the house that we're in right now, you were the one that handled our loan and got us through that process, and we were definitely the types of people who had no freaking clue what we were doing.
Yeah.
or how to approach any of that, and you made it really freaking easy, and that was kind of, and it was just like a cool thing to go through with you too, because like I've known you probably 80-90% of the time that I've lived in Oregon. You're good friends with our mutual buddy Jeff Smith.
Yep.
You know the journalism world quite a bit. So that was like a very kind of like smooth embrace for us, like going into the home buying process. Was just like, all right, I know Toby's gonna at least take care of this.
Yeah, you know, and that's the fun of it, is kind of alleviating the stress and educating. I think that's the biggest part of one of the biggest parts of taking the stress out of it. It's like, if you know what you're getting into, you know how the process is going to play out, it kind of takes the unknown out, and it kind of helps with that. So hopefully I did that for you.
Yeah. Are there any like common errors that you see like first time home buyers like come in with, or like preconceived notions they have, or things that they're generally surprised by when you're going through?
You know, I think a lot of, well, first of all, errors, you know, we'll see undisclosed things or big changes during the process. So I've got somebody pre-approved at a certain, you know, monthly payment. We have to look at the overall picture. Debt ratio is a big part of that. So part of debt ratio is making payments,
right?
Things that are going on your credit report. So like revolving debt, you know, like credit cards, student loans, auto loans.
So like maybe somebody goes out and picks up like a new $50,000 car while they're in.
Yes, you may want to talk to me before you do that, because that could throw everything off. So I would say things like that, you know, not kind of, and that's part of my job, is to say, don't do this up front, but it happens sometimes. Or if there's a job loss and no one decides to tell us, and we've got to figure it out at the end when we do a employment verification.
Right.
And they're like, no, terminated 2 weeks ago. So I would say just things like that. And I think like misconception is, credit. It really comes into play in credit score, what's involved in how the bureaus rate your credit. You know, people want to go and pay everything off to try to get their score up where you might not need to.
Right.
And you don't want to spend all your money that you may need for a down payment or closing costs. Maybe you only need to pay that down, you know, to like half the limit. Or something like that to get that score up. And so that's where I come in. We've got some stuff that, you know, some software that allows us to analyze a credit report, look for opportunities to raise a score, and really pinpoint like how much that needs to be paid down. Or maybe it just takes time.
Right.
And so, yeah, I would say that's a big one, because people just go and pay everything off and then
they just assume that, yeah, that A, it's going to make my credit perfect, and yep, B, that this is the right thing to, and it turns out having a little bit of liquidity, yeah, I can't talk today. Turns out having a little bit of cash is not a bad thing to have.
Yeah. Yeah. And then cash is another thing, you know, you don't want to have like too many cash deposits, the mattress money. It's a little hard to track for the government.
Right.
So, you know, just for those of you out there, keep in mind, get that in the bank now and let it sit for a minute.
Are these rates coming down anytime soon?
I wish I had a crystal ball. We kind of thought they'd be, you know, at this point starting to. My best guess is we're about a year away.
Okay.
Yeah. None of the Fed cuts that were predicted at the beginning of the year have happened, and you know, hopefully we'll get at least one by the end of this year. And then next year, we'll start to see a little bit of a decline. We're kind of banking on it. And so here's kind of my pitch out there. For those of you thinking about buying, you got houses out there that are cheaper than they're going to be next year. Go get it. We'll fix the rate next year.
Which is pretty easy to do. We refinanced with you within a year of buying this house when the rates dropped, and this was 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's always opportunities for that. I'm always monitoring the market and looking for opportunities to save people money. And so, yeah, as rates drop, I'll reach out and get that ball rolling. And through the end of next year, Guild Mortgage and me, we are offering no lender fees on all refinances. So there it is.
Sick.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yep. So if it's out there and you like it, go get it. We'll fix the rate, but we can't fix that sales price when rates drop and things go haywire, right?
We'll link to all the best ways to get in touch with you on this, but it, like where, you know, if people are listening, is Refi Bride the best website?
Yeah, you know, I mean,
or
yeah.
Or is
I mean,
like socials or anything? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have... Interestingly, I'm not a huge social media person, but Refi Bri is going to have all my contact info. And then if you want to follow me personally, you know, I've got Instagram at Tovey with 3 Y's. I'm on Facebook, all that. You can find me.
So we're like 15 minutes into this now. This was all just a Trojan horse to get you to come on here to tell the Danny Nagel story. I'm kidding. We're not going to have you do the Danny Nagel story. But at some point,
you know, if anybody's interested,
just message
me.
Yeah, if you want to buy a home, the biggest thing you can sell is Brian Tovey will give you the Danny Nagel story.
Oh man, that's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah. How are the pods doing?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, last season was such a disappointment because they were just completely loaded.
So I'm a Mariners fan. You're a Padres fan. Yeah. We can be empathetic to each other's situations.
Sure.
I have to imagine last year might have been like one of the worst years of being a fan, because like every time that one of our teams gets to the like all like the spring pub of like here they go again, they're spending money
all
like
in.
And then just to have, I mean, you guys had the gut punch of 2 years ago with the steroids with
Tatis
and yep. then just that you had firings and all these sorts of things like that had to have sucked. Like it couldn't have been a fun season as a fan.
It was awful. Like, we just kept waiting. We're like, they're going to turn it around. They'll go on a 20-game winning streak. Like, too much talent, you know? And they just kept digging themselves into a hole. They could not win any close games. Like, extra inning games, I think they won one out of 12 or 13 extra inning games. I mean, Nothing went their way. There was some rumored infighting and also some friction with our front office and the manager. Like, it was just a total mess. And then this year, as kind of a, you know, chain reaction to that, but, you know, we had to dump some guys. So we had to get some salary. The TV deal kind of fell apart, and then
were they Bally or were they
Bally Sports, Diamond Sports Group went bankrupt, and kind of that was revenue that the pods were banking on. And so the cuts were coming. They dealt Soto.
Did you like Soto? Because the Mariners were in discussion for Soto a lot, and I couldn't, like, smart baseball brains, like, this guy's an amazing baseball player, he's young, like, he's probably one of the top five players in the game. Dumb baseball brains, like, I hate that thing he does before every pitch, and I do not want to watch that as a member of my team.
Yeah, you know, he's kind of, I don't know, I like his personality, I like the way he plays. I don't know how good of a fit he was for the Padres. Like, I think they could have probably done just as well without him and saved some of those good prospects that we had. But at the same time, like, I get where they came from in going to get him. They were going for it. Made it to the NLCS in 22 with him. And then, you know, last year I just think I'm not sure. Maybe there was something going on behind the scenes. Right. But he just seemed like not a good fit. And, yeah, I'm not really, like, sad that he's
gone. where are you at in your Bolts fandom these days?
Dead?
Yeah.
No electricity.
That's the right answer, I think.
It's unfortunate. I was just talking to Smitty about this. And
Did you try to give, like, a couple years of, like, the Herbert thing a go of, like, they're throwing you, like, a bone here of...
It was hard to not. I had to turn my back on Herbert a little bit because I was so... hurt. I was hurt.
Yeah, I would be too.
It's devastating. Yeah. And it's not that they moved to LA. Like, I don't really care about LA. Like, I'm an LA Kings fan. I'm a Lakers fan. That may turn off some followers, but
we did some roadheads on the Lakers. Yeah, just kidding.
It's not LA. It's the ownership and kind of how they treated the city of San Diego just before leaving and on the way out, and it was just like a slap in the face. And so, you know, Smitty and I had a lot of long conversations, and I just said, I can't do it, man. Like, I cannot do it. And so it sucks.
It makes it even worse too, because you guys are both, you know, like, you're a big Ducks fan, Jeff kind of oscillates, you know, when he falls or not, but, like, you know, probably most of your friends are Herbert, or, you know, like, Bolts and Herbert fan, you know, like, just the same way we're going to see a bunch of Denver Bo Nix jerseys around like Oregon here. Like, yep. So you just have to have it kind of rubbed in your face all the time.
Yeah, Bo and Troy. My wife's a Chiefs fan too. So
really,
yeah. But she's not a front runner. Like, she's been with him for a long time. But Denver's got Bo and Troy.
The Seahawks come the Broncos come through Seattle this season. So that might have to be a little corridor special.
Let's do it, man.
Yeah, that would be a fun one.
So yeah, I've adopted the Tennessee Titans.
Marcus
was there. Yeah. You know, I kind of just, you know, naturally started supporting them, and I've actually become a decent fan. I've been to a game in Nashville. I love the city of Nashville.
I was a big Steve McNair and Eddie George fan when I was younger. Like, yeah. those two were awesome.
Yep.
Well, awesome, man. You know, this probably isn't like the sexiest podcast to sell, like, per se, but, like, I really did want to bring you on just to, like, one, we've had your face on the website for the last 30 days, and you know, we don't do a ton of ads or advertising or that sort of thing on the corridor, but when we do it, like, the biggest thing for me is, one, it's something that I believe in, and two, people I believe in, and we've been, again, as I said earlier, you were awesome for us in this process, and, like, you've just been a great friend for me over the years too. So to I sent you, like, a heads up text if I was thinking of doing this, and I think, like, within, like, 30 seconds you're like, you know, where do I send the money? which was really cool. And, you know, if anybody else has any interest in doing some sort of work with us in the future too, reach out. It's all very kind of customized. Really, really, really thank you, man. And, like, it's, again, as I said earlier, it's during a tough time of the year for us. So that was really a big thing. So thank you.
My pleasure, buddy. I'm always here to support you. You know, you're my people. And I want the Roadheads to know that I'm their people as well. Even the Beaver fans.